Online dating is now second only to mutual acquaintances as the most common way heterosexual relationships start. Sociologists researching relationships used to only be able to gather conclusions about what makes for successful and unsuccessful relationships after the fact, by researching couples after years of cohabitation or after splitting up. Dating sites have not only made it easier in many cases to select a mate, but also made it easier for researchers to track the development of a relationship in its earliest stages. Friend of the show, Kevin Lewis, is one of those sociologists. He's a Berkman Center fellow and PhD student at Harvard. His most recent research looks at how deeper personal preferences are driving mate choice.
All the online dating research has been fantastic, and I think the thing that drove me to the topic in the first place, in addition to the fact of its just explosion in popularity the past few years, is the opportunities it allows for some basically longstanding questions in social science. So to date, basically everything we know about mate choice comes from marriage patterns. Marriage data are widely accessible in the forms of census records and marriage records and that kind of thing. But really, it only gives you a shot at the outcome of a much longer process of mate selection, right? It's an outcome that's limited to the very small proportion of individuals, or non-representative portion, rather, and the population is smaller and smaller each year as we have rising rates of divorce, rising rates of cohabitation, and a rising average age of a first marriage. These marriage patterns are actually capturing fewer and fewer people. And marriage records, of course, have always and continue in most states today to totally exclude data on same-sex partnerships. Off the bat, what online dating allows us to do is to look at basically the entire opposite end of the mate selection process. Instead of looking at where people end up in relationships, so to speak, you're looking at those initial first forays into relationships, which I believe captures also a much broader, more representative segment of the population. So that's kind of where the initial interest stems.
Is online dating is it a digital analogy to the behaviors that people who are just courting in the real world? I know you said that there's not much study in that, but I mean, how do you feel it compares?
I think in some ways it's very closely aligned, in other ways not. And the ways in which it's different, I think, are the aspects of online dating that make it so interesting. We know that who we end up with, whether it's a dating relationship or marriage relationship, is not just a product of who we want to date or marry, but other factors as well. And in particular, who we have the opportunity to date or marry. If I live in a certain geographic area and only have the opportunity to interact with a very small subset of this population, or let's say I'm consumed with work and really just never get out much, my opportunities for romantic relationships are very limited. And so one of the coolest things about online dating is that basically the opportunity structure for romantic interactions is drastically increased, and it's also known. And so you're interacting with people online that you basically may never have had the opportunity to bump in real life. And so the fascinating thing about online dating from a theoretical perspective, I guess, is that your choices are much less constrained by these opportunities for interaction and physical face-to-face space that we have in day-to-day life. And instead, you can go out into cyberspace. Granted, you're limited by who else has a profile. But there's, I would say, then a much less mediated distance between who you are looking for and who you actually end up with. And that's what makes online dating so fascinating, is therefore the pronounced role of individual preferences as opposed to social constraints.
So online dating, in a way, is to mate choice as maybe Amazon.com is to, the choice of products that you buy compared to the grocery store, your local like Five and Dime or something like that.
I think that's a fantastic analogy. The parallel between online dating and Amazon is straightforward in that they're both kind of a market for people, right? But I think the extension you just provided is even more appropriate in that if you walk into the grocery store, they might just not have what you're interested in, right? And so you might come home with a brand of applesauce that you might not necessarily have wanted in the first place. Whereas the online dating, those constraints are much less constraining. And that the pool is much broader. And in fact, so long as you're willing to be a little bit lax on for instance, geographic radius of search, it's really quite a vast pool that's out there.
So has the ability to choose a better applesauce or a better mate, has it resulted in a happier customer or happier life partner?
So happier that the data are still out, I think, although very recently we're actually finding preliminary results about that type of thing. There's a fantastic survey of Michael Rosenfeld out at Stanford that is just coming out soon, where he surveyed a representative population of Americans about how they met one another, people in romantic relationships, and also to some extent the quality of the relationships, I believe. And so this is actually our first look at how these relationships that are formed online may be different from other relationships. And I think he actually finds that they're strikingly similar. Aside from the quality of the relationships, the fact is that online dating is just having a tremendous impact on the formation of romantic ties more generally. There's surveys that come out now and then from the dating sites themselves, such as Match, ReHarmony, and of course each claims to be the top dating site that's influencing the greatest proportion of marriages. But in this, I would say, more objective third-party survey, he's finding that basically 20% of heterosexual relationships today begin online, and 60% of same-sex partnerships, which to me is just astounding, that basically online dating is now the primary way that same-sex couples meet, and actually the third most common way that heterosexual couples meet, behind shared acquaintances and social venues, which is just a totally different scene than even 5-10 years ago.
But are people who meet online mostly meeting in these kind of forums, dating forums, eHarmony, Match.com, or are they also meeting in, if they share an interest in crocheting sweaters and they have a forum online for that? Are they meeting also in these kind of other shared interest forums?
Sure, great question. I'm, to be honest, I'm not sure if there are data that speaks specifically to the division. I think surveys tend to ask about one or the other, either did you meet your partner online, did you meet your partner in online dating? But I think everything points to the fact that online dating is now the primary way that people meet online. It used to be the case that absolutely these other discussion forums or other means popped up now and then, and many of us can think anecdotally about couples we know who met in other ways, whether through less traditional dating sites like Craigslist or discussion forums, or even occasionally, oh wow, like I looked up this old high school sweetheart on Facebook and that kind of thing. But I think online dating is overwhelmingly the primary source of online romantic ties today.
So there's lots of things that people do in the real world when they're trying to go out and get a mate, to bag a mate. There are a lot of social cues and subconscious activities that they do. If they're going to the club or the bar, if that's where they're trying to find a mate, they might prep themselves up. They might be a little bit more cocky or confident. They're a little less of a full human, maybe we could say, in the beginning of the pursuit. Is that a behavior that you notice online as well?
Sure. I think this goes back also to your earlier question about how the two are similar or different. Yeah, I think, again, the parallels are fascinating, but also the difference is equally striking. And I think you're absolutely right. So in real life, there's things you know and there's things you don't know. What you have is this intuitive, face-to-face compatibility, a sense of all these visual cues, all these interpersonal cues that are important and strikingly absent online, right? And so the advantage of being online is that if you care about basically these descriptive characteristics or these characteristics that one can go and check a box about, online dating is fantastic for you, because you can go just as you can on Amazon and say, look, I want a camera that has these particular specs. I can find a person with those specs as well. The limitation there is of course, what you're missing online is exactly that intuitive face-to-face sense of chemistry, right? Or just a basic question of what's this person like to interact with? And there's also some fascinating work by Dan O'Reilly to this effect that Amazon.com type thinking just really doesn't work for romantic relationships precisely because it's missing this interpersonal aspect. I think dating site users will tell you one of the biggest limitations of online dating and one of the most common stories from first dates is going up and just having this tremendously awkward experience because the person turns out to be just weird in real life or not exactly what you expected or what their profile might have led you to expect. I think the issue of lying is also and kind of aligned to that. And so is the representation you're getting online exactly what's going on in real life? Of course, you have the same issue to some extent in real life, and that people can, if you walk up to someone in a bar, they may or may not be telling you the truth about their income, their education, their background. Whereas online, you may get exaggerations to those effects as well, but you also have possible misrepresentation about things like appearance. Someone may look great in their profile picture that just is from the neck up, for instance, but may not look anything like what you expected when you actually show up for a date in real life. So also, a lot of stories from dating site users come out to that effect. And a lot of people are concerned about this also, especially someone who's studying online dating, say, well, look, are the data that you're collecting actually representative of the people themselves? And I think there's some concern for that and some research that shows that there is indeed, some exaggeration here and there. And people have a tendency to report in some ways their ideal selves online instead of what we might say their actual selves. But I think, you know, concerns about that should be a little bit restrained, in that ultimately, at the end of the day, it's really not in my best interest to exaggerate or distort the truth too much online. I'd like to give the example. So if I claim online to be a, you know, 6'3", totally well-built, muscular iBanker, and, you know, a 5'9", skinny sociologist shows up for the first date, someone's not getting a second date. It's really not in one's best interest to stray too far from the truth, insofar as that will just be a total turnoff to whoever it is you're dating.
What have been some of the more surprising findings that you've had, things that have kind of challenged your assumptions?
Some findings are intuitive from an academic perspective, and some are counterintuitive from just kind of a day-to-day perspective. That when an example of a sociologically counterintuitive finding is that, you know, one of the most interesting things about studying patterns of mate choice, just as studying patterns of marriages, is that we can use these patterns to understand social boundaries in society. And so basically, who is willing and unwilling to marry whom, who is willing and unwilling to consider whom in a romantic context. A lot of the questions I ask of these data have to do with exactly that, is what are the patterns in interaction we see, and what type of boundaries exist in mate selection. Of course, they're tremendously strong boundaries, as we've long known from the literature on marriage patterns. For instance, according to racial background, people tend to self-segregate based on racial background, based on their educational level, based on income, based on a wide variety of attributes, based on religion. What's interesting is that these patterns of self-segregation are very pronounced, for instance, in first messages, in me going out and contacting others. And so I'm very statistically very unlikely to contact someone from a different racial background as me, for instance. But actually, patterns in rates of responding are very different from patterns and rates of initial contact. And so one finding, for instance, is that while I'm very unlikely to contact someone from a different racial background as me, if such a person contacts me first, in many cases, I'm actually much more likely to reply than to someone from the same racial background as me. What I like to say is that these boundaries are very pronounced, but sometimes very fragile, and that while we're, you know, may be unwilling to cross the boundary in the first place, if someone else is willing to make the first move, this person may stand out actually even more than the types of people we would have sought out in the first place. Other less types of academically oriented interesting findings, I guess, are have equally, again, to do with what I see in my data and what I hear, you know, anecdotally. So one concern often when I present these findings and looking at, you know, rates of initial response and replies, are people are concerned with me inferring, for instance, actual interest from a reply. So someone might say, well, look, maybe someone's just more likely to respond to someone from a different racial background because they're just being polite. And in general, what do you do with messages where people are just saying, actually, thanks for emailing me, but I'm not that interested. You know, one of the funny media findings that comes up in any discussion of online dating is that norms of politeness really play a quite minimal role, I think, in online dating, in that, you know, if someone's not interested in someone else, you learn very quickly, you simply don't reply to those messages at all. Because often if you do, if you know, you may not be interested in someone at all, but they took the time to sit down and craft you a nice, interesting message. They clearly read your profile and paid attention to you. And you think, well, at least I should tell them, you know, thanks and give them a polite response. The trouble is that's often misinterpreted as interest itself, because if you weren't interested at all, why'd you bother replying in the first place? And so you might get into these awkward situations where, you know, you reply to someone politely to say no thanks, and then they just keep pestering you because they think you may actually be interested and there's some hope there. And so anyway, I think the norms that turn up online are very interesting about what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. And one of those baseline norms that's of tremendous importance is that, you know, if you're not interested, don't reply. And likewise, if someone doesn't reply to you, you shouldn't take it too personally, right? That's just the way of communicating. Whereas if I walked up to someone in real life and offered to buy them a drink, and they didn't even say no thanks, but just turn their back on me entirely, that'd be, you know, quite offensive, right?
Yeah, you're much more likely to, entertain another's attention in real life, it sounds like, than you would be online. There's no cost online to ignoring somebody.
You're absolutely right. Right. And no cost to contacting someone in the first place. You know, if I have to strike up the courage to approach, you know, someone in face-to-face interaction, it's, you know, can be embarrassing if you get rejected. It's a vulnerable situation to be in. Whereas if there's some person online who may actually be way out of my league, you know, what's actually the cost of sending them a message? It's minimal. And so I think that also drives a lot of the interaction we see.
There's this concern on the internet about people pigeonholing themselves into these little niches, and they call it homophily, where mm-hmm. you kind of will go online and you'll find your community and you won't go outside of that community, a community of common interests and common viewpoints. And people are afraid that we're just becoming this, like, balkanized intellectual ghetto online. what you're finding on dating sites, it sounds like, challenges that a little bit.
To some extent, I would say, and it challenges that that in two ways. I would say your description of the situation is absolutely accurate. That and this is not just romantic relationships, but any type of relationships, from friendship to workplace collaboration, is characterized by homophily, by the tendency to seek out similar others. The trouble with a lot of this research in the past is that it's been actually very difficult to disentangle how much of the homogeneity we observe is a product of people's actual preference for similarity, what we would say homophily, versus just, again, the constrained opportunities to interact with people who are like you. You know, maybe the case that sociologists have a tremendous tendency to date other sociologists, and you might, you know, conclude from that they actually want to. Well, it's more likely the case that these are just the only people that they're interacting with, because they're the ones they bump into day in and day out. Again, what online dating allows you to do is basically to isolate the importance of the preference for similarity per se. And so I think one of the most interesting things in the future is to more systematically compare the rates of similarity we observe in relationships that begin in face-to-face interaction versus those that begin online. Because I think you can say that those that begin online are actually much more driven, not completely driven, but much more driven by one's actual preference. The other way in which these findings, I think, may challenge traditional views on homophily is that there are much more data that are available in the first place. So traditional sociological data sets, whether on friendships or especially on marriages, tend to only have data on a very small number of attributes, for instance, often basic demographics like race and religion. Whereas online, you can observe the preference for similarity across a wide variety of attributes. And so you never know, for instance, if maybe an apparent preference for similarity on one attribute is actually just a spurious consequence of preference for similarity on another attribute with which the first is correlated. So having given that people report so much about themselves on online dating profiles, you can actually disentangle this multidimensional preferences and identify the extent to which what people seem to care about is actually a product of caring about something else, and compare the importance of different types of principles of self-segregation.
Well, that's interesting. So maybe homophily is still an issue, but maybe it's a lot more of a complex issue than we think about, because dating sites just ask you to be so much more open about who you are and provide so much more information about what your interests are and what you're interested in. We can get a better portrait of a person, not only for sociological purposes, but for dating purposes, so we can establish these interests, these commonalities, where we wouldn't necessarily find them in the real world or even in other online forums.
I mean, if I were to tell you, well, look, I'm seeking, someone who is, Hispanic, who is Catholic, and who has a PhD like me, and that's all I'm looking for in a mate. That's, I think, a quite impoverished, or maybe quite broad selection criteria, right? That's really all I'm seeking in a romantic partner. But often those are the only types of data we have to go on as sociologists. Whereas online, you can say, well, look, I am seeking someone, who's Hispanic, Catholic, and has a PhD, but I also want someone who loves dogs like me, someone who drinks socially like me, someone who is an Aries like me, and a wide variety of preferences, right? Naturally, these don't capture nearly anywhere close to all the nuances of someone's personality. But with these additional, more objective characteristics that one might care about, in combination with their, the open-ended profile responses, essay responses on individuals' profiles, and of course, the photographs, I think you actually do get a, quite a nuanced portrait of who people are online, which again is very helpful as someone who's seeking a date, and also extremely helpful for researchers who are looking at these data from a scientific perspective.
How could we design a social network that wouldn't be designed for the purpose of dating, to get people of different backgrounds to meet and enjoy each other's company?
Interesting. In terms of social network sites that are out there, I mean, online dating sites, I think, still constitute only a minority of what's going on. We see many sites approaching this topic in very different ways, and some allow you to provide more broad information about yourself. Some sites focus on very specific aspects of yourself and attract people from those backgrounds. I guess we see a similar situation in online dating, where some sites appeal to people because they're so broad and so large, whereas other sites are appealing precisely because they attract the demographic that I'm interested in. Online dating sites for fans of Apple products, for instance, or online dating sites for people with certain educational backgrounds. I'd be hard-pressed, actually, to think about what exactly broader social network sites could do to better connect folks. I think they already do a relatively remarkably good job of doing so. what's often more interesting to me is how can online dating sites pick up on those lessons of broader social network sites and improve their own services. And so one of the huge limitations of online dating that relates to something we discussed earlier, for instance, is that you really don't know. You may have this pretty broad, thorough description of someone online, but at the end of the day, you just don't know what they're going to be like in face-to-face interaction. Whereas in traditional ways of meeting folks, if I'm meeting someone through shared acquaintances, what you have offline that you actually don't often have online is social closure. Is that if there's someone you're considering to go on a date with, you can ask your buddies about this person. Say, look, tell me about this person. Is this someone I'll get along with? What do you think? Just baseline, a person I would get along with. Whereas online, you have this basic question mark about, well, is this just kind of like a normal person? Is it going to be an awkward first interaction? I have no idea because we have no friends whatsoever in common. I think online dating sites have been trying to experiment with this, but unsuccessfully so far, is how to bridge this gap between individual preferences and social closure, and how can we actually create a system that allows people to not just know objective facts about people, but also get references one way or another through shared third parties that no one's really developed this systematically just yet.
Oh, one last question, and let me know if this gets too personal, but I'm not sure what you're... dating or relationship status is, but I'm sure you get this question all the time, but based on your research, has your research informed your own kind of courtship and relationship, either mentality or pursuit thereof?
I would say for better or worse, and my friends will vouch for this as well, I probably tend to do things in real life that I don't know if my research would say is helpful or not. But I keep the two spheres separate, and I can't really say that pursuing dates myself, I'm necessarily thinking what my research shows. And if anything, I think often the personal lessons I get are more from these stories from other friends about their own experiences. What my data show me are really fascinating patterns of interaction, but they're also very limited as well because I really don't know what these interaction patterns mean. And that to me is why it's so fun to talk to friends about their own experiences, because those experiences color in the objective, the quantitative findings that I have, and provide more of a qualitative, subjective take on things. That's what's so fascinating about sociology in general, right, is the close coupling between the things we study and our day-to-day face-to-face interaction. And I think we can't help but be driven to topics to study academically that interest us personally. And so, I think that the fact that online dating has risen so much in recent years, and you find, hear more and more stories about friends and acquaintances who are finding one another online, totally amplified my own interest in the subject and pursuit of that academically.
You could put that on a online dating profile.
I could. Do you think that'd be attractive or not? Do you really want to go on a date with the guy who's studying you?
Well, thank you so much. Thanks for spending the time here.
Well, thanks, Dan. It's been absolutely my pleasure.
Kevin Lewis is a Berkman Center Fellow and PhD student at Harvard. If you're interested in checking out more conclusions from his research or just finding out about a single guy who likes sociology, you can follow his work by finding a link at our website, blogs.law.harvard.edu/mediaberkman. And this spring, Radio Berkman is getting a makeover. Find out how you can help us out by visiting our website. Once again, that's blogs.law.harvard.edu/mediaberkman. This week's episode was produced by me, Daniel Dennis Jones, with our superstar new producer, Francis Harlow, from the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University in Cambridge, Massachusetts.